weapons to Cuba, but it might have little effect on the weapons already there. The Joint Chiefs of Staff unanimously agreed that the Soviet missiles had to be attacked at once, without any warning. Like the Jupiters in Italy and Turkey, the missiles in Cuba weren't protected by concrete silos. From a strictly military point of view, they were useful only for a Soviet first strike, and their strategic purpose seemed to be a decapitation attack against the military and civilian leadership of the United States. The ballistic missile early warning system was oriented to the north and the east, not the south. Missiles launched from Cuba might not be detected until their thermonuclear warheads hit American targets 3 or 4 minutes later. The Joint Chiefs recommended a massive airstrike against the Soviet missiles, planes, and weapons in Cuba. A limited strike would not only be more dangerous, they argued, it might be worse than doing nothing at all. Missiles that survived the attack would probably be hidden or launched, and the one opportunity to destroy them lost. The strategic implications of the missiles meant less to President Kennedy than the intangible threat they posed. It doesn't make any difference if you get blown up by an ICBM flying from the Soviet Union or one that was 90 miles away, he said the day after the missiles were discovered. Failing to destroy them or to force their removal would make America look weak. It might encourage the Soviets to move against Berlin. But attacking the missiles brought a whole new set of risks. At a meeting with the Joint Chiefs of Staff on October 19th, 4 days into the crisis, after the president and his brother and his national security advisors had gone back and forth discussing what sort of action to take, the stark differences between America's civilian and military leadership were exposed. If we attack Cuba, the missiles, or Cuba in any way, then it gives the Soviets a clear line to take Berlin, President Kennedy said. General LeMay disagreed. We've got the Berlin problem staring us in the face anyway, LeMay said. If we don't do anything to Cuba, then they're going to push on Berlin and push real hard because they've got us on the run. LeMay thought the Strategic Air Command was so overwhelmingly powerful, and America's nuclear superiority was so great that the Soviets wouldn't dare to attack Berlin or the United States. Anything short of an air strike on Cuba, he told Kennedy, would be almost as bad as the appeasement at Munich that led to the Second World War. The remark was especially pointed. Kennedy's father had long been criticized for supporting that appeasement of Hitler. An extraordinary exchange soon occurred between America's commander-in-chief and one of its most prominent generals. LeMay, I think that a blockade and political talk would be considered by a lot of our friends and neutrals as being a pretty weak response to this, and I'm sure a lot of our own citizens would feel the same way. In other words, you're in a pretty bad fix at the present time. President Kennedy, what did you say? LeMay, you're in a pretty bad fix. President Kennedy, you're in there with me. Slight laughter, a bit forced. Personally. When the meeting ended, Kennedy left the cabinet room, unsure about what to do. The tape recorder was still running. General David Shoup, Commandant of the Marine Corps, turned to LeMay. I just agree with you, Shoup said. I agree with you 100%. On the evening of October 22nd, America's television networks interrupted their regularly scheduled programming to broadcast a special message from the president. Appearing somber and grim behind his desk in the Oval Office, Kennedy informed the nation that Soviet missiles had been spotted in Cuba. He called upon Khrushchev to eliminate this clandestine, reckless, and provocative threat to world peace. He reminded viewers that a policy of appeasement, of allowing aggressive conduct to go unchallenged, had led to the Second World War. And he declared that the United States was imposing a modified blockade, a quarantine on the shipment of offensive weapons to Cuba. The Soviet missiles had to be removed, and Khrushchev had to move the world back from the abyss of destruction. Otherwise, Kennedy said, the United States would take further unspecified actions. The Joint Chiefs of Staff had established 5 defense readiness conditions, DEFCON, for the armed forces. DEFCON 5 was the state of military readiness during normal peacetime operations. DEFCON 1 meant that war was imminent. As Kennedy spoke to the nation, the Joint Chiefs ordered American forces to DEFCON 3. Polaris submarines left their ports and headed for locations within range of the Soviet Union. Fighter interceptors patrolled American airspace with Genies and Falcons, atomic anti-aircraft rockets, in case Soviet planes tried to attack from Cuba. Nearly 200 B-47 bombers left SAC bases and flew to dozens of civilian airports throughout the United States, to Portland, Spokane, and Minneapolis, to Chicago and Detroit, to Birmingham, Philadelphia, and Tulsa. Dispersing the bombers from SAC bases made them less vulnerable to a Soviet missile attack. Air crews slept on the ground beside their planes, which were loaded with hydrogen bombs, as commercial airliners took off and landed on nearby runways. The number of B-52s on airborne alert was increased more than 5-fold. Every day, about 65 of the bombers circled within striking distance of the Soviet Union. Each of them carried a Hound Dog missile with a thermonuclear warhead, as well as 2 Mark 39 or 4 Mark 28 hydrogen bombs. On October 24th, when the quarantine of Cuba took effect, the Strategic Air Command was placed on DEFCON 2 for the first time in its history. I am addressing you for the purpose of re-emphasizing the seriousness of the situation this nation faces, General Power said in a message transmitted to all his commanders worldwide. We are in an advanced state of readiness to meet any emergencies. I expect each of you to maintain strict security and use calm judgment during this tense period. Sent by radio, without any encryption, his announcement that SAC was ready for war could also be heard by the Soviets. 250,000 American troops prepared for an invasion of Cuba. Secretary of Defense McNamara worried that with thousands of nuclear weapons on high alert, something could go wrong. President Kennedy had recently approved the installation of permissive action links, but his executive order applied only to weapons in the NATO atomic stockpile, and none of the locks had been installed yet. U.S. Air Force units in Europe were kept at DEFCON 5, and the ready